In attendance is Senator Donnelly, Senator Pierce, Senator Frank, and myself, Senator Miller. The first item we will be taking on today's calendar is Senate Bill 240, which is Senator Pierce's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a proposed CS for Senate Bill 240 in your packet. It's the Cook version J dated 2/11/94. For working purposes, I would move the CS.
Is there objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Let me quickly explain for the record what the changes were. We have worked with Senator Little, Representative Davis, City of Soldotna, the Kenai Borough, Kenai River Special Management Area Advisory Board, Fish and Game Habitat and Restoration Division, so on and so forth. And we've got a CS, as I said, and there are some changes that I'd just like to note. Section 1A was clarified to stipulate that the tax credit is for restoring or protecting fish spawning habitat. Page 1, line 11, we inserted the phrase "a fish habitat" after the word degradation. And I'm sorry, I just misspoke. I shouldn't have said spawning. We're protecting fish habitat. We didn't want to say just spawning because after the fish spawn, they still spend time in the rivers and streams, but in different places, actually eating. So we wanted to protect all the habitat, not just the spawning area. On page 1, line 12, we inserted the words "along or" after the word "habitat." That loosened the bill a bit to give local governing bodies more flexibility in applying tax credits. And the definition of river's edge was tightened to include the mean high tide water line and the ordinary high water line. As you'll remember, we had some long discussion about that. Page 2, line 10. After the word "law" on the original bill, we deleted through line 15. That deletes a condition that was a condition of a permit, natural erosion, and commercial access exemptions that would have precluded a credit from being given. We had written into our bill inadvertently a complete catch-22 so that no credit could ever be given. On page 2, line 16, after the word "the," we inserted the mean high tide line. And then on page 2, line 17, we deleted the words "a non-title" and once again inserted the non-title portion off. And so we took care of the gentleman's problem about title areas. And I think we've come up with definitions and clarifications that have satisfied everyone. And finally, on page 2, line 23, we've added language. It says the Department of Fish and Game may, by regulation, establish procedures to be used in applying for certification and may require submission of plans for approval before construction of an improvement as a condition of certification. We do have letters from the Kenai Borough endorsing the changes, along with the Kenai River Special Management Area Advisory Board also endorsing the changes.
Thank you, Senator Pierce. Also in attendance is Senator Lehman. I have Soldotna online. Is there anyone in Soldotna to testify? Oh, excuse me.
Want a motion to adopt the committee substitute?
Oh, we just did that just earlier. Anyone in Soldotna online to testify?
We did it before we heard what it was.
As a working guy.
I guess there is no one in Soldotna.
Can you ready to move it?
Let's see if there's anybody here.
They sounded like good changes.
There is nobody signed up on 240. Is anyone in the audience that would like to testify on 240? What is the wishes of the committee? Senator Lehman.
Chairman, I move that the Resources Committee discharge CS for Senate Bill 240 with individual recommendations. And do we have any fiscal notes with it?
Zero
fiscal note and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. 240 is discharged from committee. Next item we'll take up is SCR 13, the Gold Rush Centennial Decade.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, this is the Soldotna moderator.
Yes.
We did have someone here who wanted to testify on Senate Bill 240.
Okay, didn't you hear me when I was asking for people to testify?
No, I was out of the room, and I'm sorry about that, but he is here right now, and he is present. He did not realize how to push the button.
Okay, certainly. Let's go ahead and have him testify.
Mr. Leo Holbert?
Go right ahead.
Yes, I'm Leo Holbert, and I just wanted to mention that Senator Zeroff had been up here 10 years ago when the Kenai River Special Management Bill was up. And at that point in time, we had quite a few problems, and actually, to a great extent, quite a few of them haven't been satisfied to date. But I did have a couple of items on the bill itself I'll go over to Ed. And gone down into the, it would be line 13 on page, on the first page, where it talks about the ordinary high waters that reflect the highest level so forth on the river. Why, I had called Senator Pierce's office and spoke to a fellow by the name of Erickson there. I asked him, I said, before I said anything, I said, you know what that states there? What does it say? I said, I really can't understand it the way it's written. So he said, well, he said, the Fish and Game told him that this is where plants grow along the riverbank. Well, I said, well, that's the problem. Why can't we just call it where the plants, collateral plants grow along the river? Now, all of these items that are in here, because actually what's being done here is just setting up a whole bunch of additional lawsuits. We've had considerable lawsuits in this on where the ordinary high water mark is. And if you read that, there's all kinds of things in there, even to litter and debris where we have the glacial lakes here that plunge continually. We had one this year that distributes that all along the river. So really it is not a proper way to identify. It should be, as we said at the time, yeah, it should be there. So why have that in there? Going on down then to the next item down here on, it would be on line 23. At the time we had the other legislative hearing here, I spoke at that time, and I spoke to the fact that we're talking about improving where damage has already occurred on rivers, on the river. And I said, well, I maintain my property in its natural state ever since I have. Actually, I'm sure that Senator Zuroff, I understand he isn't there, but would remember the conversations we had at the meeting. We had standing only meetings whereby the hearing was held on the bill, and they had received a whole line of information that we thought was important to the river. The majority of those haven't been satisfied yet. But this one here is a real sore to me, because I have maintained all of my property in its natural state, and yet I'm not getting any consideration in this bill. And actually, from the Bureau of Borough's point of view, between 1992 and 1993, for the tax bill for 1993, they raised my taxes. We paid $9,200 in 92, and then in 1993 bill, they raised it to $24,000. The reason they did was, this is because we maintain our river frontage in its natural state. Well, this is kind of the reverse of what we're trying to do. Are we protecting the river? Are we going to be taxing it because we do protect the river? That's kind of where I'm at now. And if there are any questions, I'd certainly like to answer them. Because it's very important to me that I protect that river. I've done it all of my life that I've lived here. Been here now for 40 years. And keeping an eye on that river, trying to keep people off of it, is no great fun, I'll tell you that. And as a result of it, I did sell the property known as the Pillars to the city, which will be, well, in fact, with Inkle Johnson's fund, will be used for a park and to allow some access to the river, in the lower part of the river, where we have the full majority of problems that is not really being addressed in this bill, and I won't get into them now. So if there's no questions, and you understand what I'm saying, I guess that would be the end of my testimony.
Thank you. Senator Pierce.
Mr. Albertson, in response to both of your points, the definition of ordinary high water line is the definition that we use in statutes to be consistent from one statute to another. The Kenai River is designated in statute as a special use area, and so we had to have a definition that fit with what's already in statute. The second point about having land that you've had no development on, it is our understanding that under present state law, you already have the right to receive conservation easements, and that would speak to your land, which has not been touched. And the borough can already work under the conservation easement statute. All this law speaks to is a different situation from yours.
I just spoke to the Nature Conservancy yesterday. We had a meeting concerning the conservancy zone along the river, and really that doesn't answer the problem at all, because all it does to set up a whole bunch of additional rules that you must follow, and really it doesn't answer the question. And then going back up to the ordinary high water, that's the problem within the state. The other law, whichever one it is, but that's the problem that we have. It's set up so that all it does is generate additional court cases. Because I've been at a court case where there were three different experts, and every one of them had a different opinion as to where ordinary water was. Well, we need something to identify absolutely what it is. And if it isn't in this law, then you should be changing the other one. Thank you.
Thank you. The next bill we will deal with is SCR 13. And we need to find Cam. We will recess just for a couple of minutes until we find the sponsor of the bill.
Tax credit
on privacy.
You didn't get any tax credit for the things he built, and I'm going to claim it now 100 years later.
Okay. We are back in session. Senator Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope we're talking about SCR 13.
Yes, we are now.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing this resolution. The intent of this resolution is to promote the importance of gold mining and the origin of our state and its development, both past and in the future, hopefully. This resolution recognizes the years 1994 to 2004 as the gold rush centennial decade. It urges schools, public and private organizations, and the people of the state to coordinate statewide celebrations of this 100th year anniversary. And this celebration will serve to promote an understanding of the importance of the gold rush era in Alaska's history and enhance tourism opportunities in that respect. In 1993, the governor and lieutenant governor established the Alaska Gold Rush Centennial Task Force, which now has over 120 power active members from 25 communities throughout Alaska. SCR 13 also recognizes the task force as the official coordinator and promoter of statewide centennial activities. For this for your information, on February 16th, tomorrow, I guess, 1994, the Gold Rush Task Force Executive Committee and annual task force meeting will be held in Juneau. I think it's appropriate that we're talking about this resolution at this time.
That's thank you, Senator Sharp. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you. I understand I have someone on teleconference in Anchorage that would like to testify on this.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
I'm Janet McCabe with the National Park Service, and speaking in support of the resolution, we think it would be an excellent step to designate the next 10 years as the Gold Rush Centennial Decade. That span of time would encompass the centennial of numerous gold rushes that occurred throughout Alaska 100 years ago, extending from the Kenai Peninsula through Skagway to Nome. The resolution we think is none too soon, since some of the Kenai gold rush, for instance, occurred in the late 1880s. We expect that the centerpiece of the 10-year celebration will be the centennial of the Klondike gold rush, which passed through Skagway in 1897 and 1898. That gold rush has international fame, and its celebration will enhance the tourist attractions, the celebrations of gold rushes in all the other parts of the state. And the National Park Service is strongly supportive of the cooperative efforts of the Gold Rush Task Force. As you may know, two of the National Historic Parks in Alaska, particularly the Klondike Gold Rush National Historic Park and Skagway, celebrates the gold rush. And the gold rush is also an important part of the historic story of the Yukon Charley National Preserve and, of course, the Nome area. We have been working with the state agencies and many other partners on the Gold Rush Task Force to plan for the Gold Rush Centennial, and we hope that you will take this opportunity to formally establish the Gold Rush Centennial Decade and to recognize the role of the Gold Rush Task Force in coordinating state,
federal, and other agencies, and promoting centennial activities. Thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone here in Juneau that would like to testify on this? Okay, seeing none, thank you. What I will do is we will go on to, Senator Frank is on his way here, and I expect at that time, since we reestablish a quorum, we will have a motion to to deal with the bill. And then the next bill we will deal with will be Senator Frank's bill 217 on the land grants to the University of Alaska. So we will stand in recess until we have reestablished our quorum. Waiting for you.
All right.
Okay, we have reestablished a quorum, Senator Frank, Senator Pierce, and Senator Lehman and Senator Miller. We are still on CRS 17, whatever we're on. Senator Lehman.
Mr. Chairman, as the great-grandson of a Kenai Peninsula gold miner in the 1880 gold rush, which I just heard testimony of, I didn't realize it was a gold rush there. He didn't strike it rich. And as the grandson of a Klondiker gold miner, it gives me great pleasure to move SCR 13 from the Resources Committee with and accompanying fiscal note with individual recommendations.
Are there objections? Hearing none, so ordered. I'll have to tell you sometime how you make a small
you harken question. Back to your ancestors when you make some of your decisions here around the table time to time.
Well, Senator Lehman is a firm believer in how you make a small fortune in gold mining, and that's you start with a large fortune.
Start with a large fortune. Same thing in fishing.
The next item on today's calendar is Senate Bill 217, an act relating to the University of Alaska and university lands. Senator Frank Bill, Rick Sully, we have a proposed committee substitute, and he will be explaining that proposed committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Rick Soley, aide to Senator Steve Frank. I'm looking at CS for SB 217, dated February 15th at version R, Chenoweth. And the two changes that were made in this bill from the Hess version were incorporation of an amendment that will not allow the university to select lands that are on the Department of Natural Resources, Oil and Gas Division's five-year oil and gas leasing plan. That's the first change. And the second is that we, on this conveyance cost issue, there's been some concern originally that it would be expensive for the department to administer this, and the university said they were willing to pay for it. But there was concern that the original method of conveyance would have been costly because they would have had to survey each part before they took conveyance, and so we utilized a system that's already in law, the municipal selection process. Those two changes, Mr. Chairman, the first change on oil and gas leasing is on page 4. It's section 4, starts in line 12. We in number 3, and we just include that say that land that's within the five-year proposed oil and gas leasing program is not something the university can take conveyance of. And the second change then on the cost of conveyance starts on page 6, down at the bottom of the page on line 30, where we say subject to appropriation, the university shall reimburse the DNR for reasonable costs incurred. And then we go on to use this method of conveyance that the Department of Natural Resources currently uses for municipal conveyances. It's 2965070. Those are the only changes, Mr. Chairman, that were made to the bill from the Hess version.
Senator Lehman.
Rick, earlier we were, during the break, we were talking about land that is not currently leased or in the five-year proposed leasing program that may be under license, and I don't remember the citation for that area. Maybe Mr. Gallagher does. I don't see it on page 4.
Okay.
Is that the B, is that 3B on line 17, is that 3805180D?
Mr. Chairman, section 13 of the bill on the last page, page 11, is the enactment of
Section 5. Okay.
So that's right. This 365D is where we repeal and reenact that provision where we cite the licensure provision. And so this section only becomes effective if the oil and gas licensure bill passes.
Okay. I see it on page 7, starting at line 22.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Could we have a motion to adopt this as a working grant, Senator Lehman?
Senator Frank. Senator Frank.
I would move that we adopt a CS and ask unanimous consent.
Are there objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Any further questions for Mr. Soli?
I have a question.
Senator Frank.
Rick, could you clarify the situation with regard to mining claims and how those, mining claims, how they would be? Let's say a miner has a claim, working a claim, or well, I guess you'd have to be working a claim. Anyway, you got a claim. And how would that work if the university was to, let's say there was a mineralized area and a claim in the middle of it, and the university wanted to designate the whole area and, you know, acquire the whole area under this bill. But it, you know, in the middle of it, there was this mining claim. What would the status? I mean, what would be the
they're doing it now.
Result of that for the mining claim and the miner?
If, Mr. Chairman, Senator Frank, if they wanted to acquire a claim that was currently held by a
right.
miner,
somehow here,
because it says it's not subject to a possessory interest or encumbrance other than.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Miner.
The university is, under that section, 365, is allowed to take possession of a claim that's currently held by a miner. However, if you go to section 6 of the bill on page 8, this was also a change that was made in the Hess Committee. We say that the down at about line 18, the equitable title and responsibility for the management of the land selected vests with the University of Alaska only upon conclusion of the term of the lease, contract, claim, sale, permit, or right-of-way and any renewal authorized by law. What that means, then, is if there is a valid claim that the university could not take, they could not manage or receive the income generated by that mining claim until such time as the claim was let loose, I guess.
And they couldn't change the terms or conditions. They couldn't come back and change the rent and royalty provisions of the claim?
Mr. Chairman, I would let Mr. Gallagher from DNR answer that. I think we would say no. There may be that may be a legal question on
the way I read it. It says only upon conclusion of the terms. I would think that they could, but it would be have to be after the conclusion of the terms of the first lease or whatever, and then if they re-entered into a subsequent lease. That's how I read it, but maybe
that's
Mr.
how
Gallagher
I read it too. But I want to be clear on that.
Right,
it says equitable title too and a responsibility for management.
As far as a claim goes, that goes on in perpetuity until they don't pay the rent. So the claim will be valid. The lease, we say any lease that is authorized, extension authorized by law, so I believe that the university there could not take possession of that lease or management of it until somebody let the lease go. But I'd like Mr. Gallagher to respond to that as well. We crafted this to basically try and make it treasury neutral so that the university was not going out and grabbing mining leases or claims that were producing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Senator Pierce.
What else would they want?
They would want potential, lands with mineral potential, lands with timber potential, lands with oil and gas potential, but not lands that have been basically discovered by someone else. My intent is clearly to allow the university to select lands that may have development potential, but not to allow them to cherry pick lands that are already under production or under lease or under contract and allow the revenues to bypass the legislature and flow to the university. That isn't my intent. My intent is to allow them to intensively manage and develop lands that that are basically going unnoticed, undeveloped at this juncture under state management.
Well,
that's the concept.
Senator Pierce.
I appreciate that. It would seem to me that this is a way of going around our constitutional prohibition on dedicated funds that
it's
we provide from the community resource system. And I'm trying to figure out what sort of new bureaucracy the university is going to want set up side by side with DNR to decide what they think is developable and so on and so forth.
We do have Mr. Rogers online, too.
Well, let me just respond, because we did cover a lot of these issues in Hess. And, you know, the university does have a land grant today. It does have a land management responsibilities and functions. And the dedication of funds issues was dealt with in Hess and handled in Hess. We do not believe there's any dedication of funds, and our attorney so states that. And
but I'm not saying that this actually dedicates funds to them. That's kind of begging the question. I'm saying that, in a way, giving the university more lands, choosing more lands out of the state's entitlement, and endowing them with that land, you're choosing the university over all the other uses for our general funds. In a way, that is indeed dedicating funds.
Well,
I'm not saying that it's a legal question, because I believe you when you say all the attorneys say it's all right. I'm saying philosophically, isn't it a dedication?
Well, it's certainly, you know, it's a decision by the legislature to allow the university to come into more of a position of equity with other states in their land-grant universities. I mean, this nation's had a history of land-grant universities that's served it well, and the university was supposed to get a land-grant before statehood, and its land-grant was never fulfilled adequately, and this is an attempt to do that. And I think on a philosophical basis, if we felt that you know, we've got 104 million acres. That's a lot of land. Giving the university 1 million acres because of the historical nature of land-grant universities, it's consistent with that. It's consistent with what they're already doing with their smaller land-grant of 112, I think it is, 1,000 acres. It does certainly give them a preference, but it's such a small portion of our overall land-grant. And it gives them extra incentive to intensively manage the lands. And if it is a philosophical dedication, perhaps it is. But I don't find it to be, obviously, I don't find it to be objectionable from that perspective, because you know, it's a state institution, it's a public purpose, and I don't have a problem with it personally.
Can I ask a question? Brian, of the land that you presently have, 100 and however many thousand acres, 112,064, is that spread throughout the state? And I guess my question is, if we're talking about giving you a million more acres so you can go out and first try to figure out which of those lands you think have the best prospective oil and mineral and timber, perhaps our perspective for oil and gas and timber, is that what you've done with the 110,000? I mean, would you just use in-house people, or are you going to have new people to look at all of that? How are you going to handle this?
For the chair, in response, Senator Pierce, the land is spread throughout the state, although we have very little in the northern and western parts of Alaska. The mix we have now is includes timberlands, it includes subdivisions, gravel, some mineral, and at this point one oil and gas, small oil and gas parcel. The university manages that land with 9 individuals, and the intent would be to hold to about that number, working with private sector firms for development, as we've done with the largest projects this year, which are both timber sales. We have gone out and solicited firms to handle the harvest and marketing for us, so we work primarily through the private sector.
Since you're already online, Brian, is there anything else that you'd like to add to the discussion?
Well, I think it's important to look at this issue in the context of the national history of land-grant institutions. The university had a much larger land grant, but due to lack of survey, lost that land grant at statehood. And I believe members of the committee have been provided with a history of the university's land grant written by Dr. Terrence Cole. The legislature has been pushing the university to generate additional non-general funds to manage its ranch in the governor's terms, and we believe that our active management has moved us from virtually
no net income to $6 million in net income this year. That money does go into a trust fund, which predates statehood, which is managed by the Department of Revenue. The income from that trust fund is inflation proofs the fund, covers cost of land management, and supports university programs throughout the state. I think that this bill redresses an old wrong. Was a bill, a very similar bill passed the first state legislature, was vetoed by then Governor Egan for reasons that we don't really understand today. We do think that this offers an opportunity to develop additional land within Alaska, and that we've tried to address the primary concerns of the other land issues currently before the legislature, mental health, municipal entitlements, mineral claims, et cetera, in the HESCS that are carried forward into this draft resources CS. We believe this is not a short-term bill, but really a long-range bill to provide some financial stability for the University of Alaska system.
I just read the veto record, or at least the part of it that Dr. O put in on page 19 and 20 of the what Brian was speaking to, and I understand exactly what he did. Makes sense.
Are there any questions for Mr. Rogers? Thank you, Brian. Mr. Gallagher, maybe you could come forward and answer some of the questions that have been brought forth, especially regarding leasing and mineral or mineral mining leasing claims. And
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to make one correction. For the record, when I said what the changes were in the CS, there was one minor one that I hadn't mentioned that you've already looked at. It was the one about the disposition of income, responsibility for managing the land. We had already said that the university wouldn't get the money, but we added manage the land either. And that was a change from the Hess version to here. I failed to mention that.
Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Gallagher. I'm with the Department of Natural Resources. And before I make a statement, I guess I'll respond to the issue of mining claims. The way we read Section 6, which is on page 8, line 11, mining claims and other leases and various kinds of encumbrances on the land would remain under the management of the Department of Natural Resources, and the income stream would continue to flow directly into the state treasury until such time as that mining claim was abandoned or disappeared.
So in other words, to answer the question, that then the university couldn't come in and unilaterally change the lease on the contracts because you're still holding the contracts.
That's how we read Section 6, and I think that's the intent of it.
Thank you. Go right ahead.
I just have a couple of brief comments. First of all, I'd like to express publicly my thanks to Senator Frank and his staff and Brian Rogers, because some of the technical concerns that we had with the earlier version were fixed to our satisfaction, and we do appreciate that. And I think as Senator Frank knows, we have one concern with the bill. It's a policy call. And the department is concerned about the conveyance of oil and gas to the university. We don't believe that is in the best interest of the state. That is the single resource that produces obviously significant income and benefits every Alaskan, every group. We believe will continue to do so for decades, if not centuries. And we believe that oil and gas should be reserved to the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Any committee discussion on that point?
Well, I guess I'm a member of the committee, so I guess I could discuss it. I appreciate that concern. I think it's the legislature's call. I think that we have gone to a reasonable degree to, again, the intent was not to have the university high grade work that the department's done to bring revenue to the treasury, but at the same time, if they see oil potential that isn't being worked on by the department, or if they happen to discover oil on lands that were conveyed, I think they should, have the mineral resources, including oil and gas, to go along with the rest of the resources. And it is just kind of a judgment or policy call. I don't know that if something occurred down the line to a point where the university had, you know, hit a bonanza, I suspect the state still owns the university and probably take it back if they wanted to, I suppose.
I suppose that would probably be the would be one of the reactions. Probably the first reaction would be a correspondence reduction in state funds to the university. As I, just knowing the legislature, I think that would probably be the first reaction.
Well, I'm hopeful that the legislature wouldn't, you know, penalize the university for any success that it has, and I don't think it will. I don't suspect that they'll hit a, you know, a Prudhoe Bay or anything that'll, you know, that'll make extremely dramatic revenue accrued to the university, but I think it will be, will help to augment the university's revenue stream, and I think that's important.
Right. I think what Mr. Rogers really wants is another 1,000 building lots in Nenana.
Anderson, I think it was.
Oh, Anderson, right. Give or take, either one. Of course, if it's in the Nenana, they may be in the middle of a hog farm. I don't know. Actually, those, if the hog farm goes, those building lots in the Nenana actually might be worth something. With that, what is the wishes of the committee? I think that we've probably pretty well addressed everything of the concerns that were raised in the Hess Committee, of which Senator Lehman and myself are also members of, and I know that I think they probably have been addressed in this CS. What is the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we pass out Senate Bill 217 with individual recommendations along with the fiscal notes. And ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 217 has passed out of resources.
We're going to make you work a little harder on this one.
The schedule for tomorrow is that we will be taking, it will be my intention to be taking public testimony tomorrow on Senate Bill 215, which commonly known as splitting the nickel. So with that, Senate Resources is adjourned.
Can we give half the nickel to the university?
They probably
sure,
take it.
They take it.
They take it.